Shane forced a smile as Linda attempted to get another spoon into their daughter's mouth. The little girl wriggled and squirmed in her seat, always eager to find something more entertaining than eating. She would get round to it eventually, but at nearly 2 years old, saw no future in hurrying anything. A grubby hand reached out for her cup and swiped it onto the floor. Her laughter and delight subdued any anger her parents might have felt. She was just too cute to stay cross with. The Cardiac Ordeal by Andrew Freudenberg. Do you want me to try and feed her? You've got work. Don't worry about it. We've got a morning to eat breakfast. Shane glanced at his watch and looked out of the window at the grey skies. It seemed like months since the weather had been anything approaching pleasant. Probably an exaggeration, but he missed the summer months. At least then, they could go and relax in the park on weekends. For the rest of the year, they were virtual prisoners in their tiny home. They'd done their best to make it comfortable, of course, but this ageing council flat wasn't exactly bursting with potential. I need a holiday. Immediately, he regretted voicing the thought. There was no mileage in complaining, and he couldn't face another argument. Linda looked up from where she was sponging spilled milk from the ground. She looked tired, he thought. There were shadows under her eyes, and her skin looked pale and dry. If anyone could do with a change of scenery, it was her. We need holiday, he corrected. Her voice was a half whisper. Maybe we'll be able to afford it next year. I should be able to work part-time when Emma goes to nursery. Living in the city did not come cheap. As well as the obvious things, like rent, taxes, and everyday bills, they both had student loans for degrees that somehow hadn't turned into lucrative jobs. At least we found each other, he thought, scrabbling for a silver lining. Then there was Emma. She was what kept them together and gave them the will to keep going. Throwing off the shadow of gloom that was enveloping him, he reached across the table and grabbed her hands. She shrieked and giggled, pulling her fingers free from his. He pulled her face and swigged the remains of his coffee. His chair screeched as it dragged across the worn vinyl flooring, and he stood up. I'd better go. Okay. Hey, cheer up. How can you be sad when we have a little monkey like this in the house? Oh, I'll be fine. I'm just tired. He leant over his daughter and kissed the top of her head, breathing in her scent as if it might sustain him through the day. She smelled of freshly baked biscuits, and it lifted his heart. Shane arrived at work, out of breath and out of sorts, barely swiping his entry card in time to avoid losing an hour's pay. The gate clicked, and he was inside. He dashed to the cloakroom, where several acquaintances were donning the long blue lab coats that the company insisted on. You look like you had to run, mate. Alarm not go off. Somebody jumped in front of the train again. Poor bastard. Well, I can sympathise. With me or him? Both, I suppose. Well, I'm all right. Even if I did have to stand all the way. I expect they're still scraping him off the tracks. It might be my imagination, but it seems to be happening more and more often these days. I think you're right. Hard times. What a way to go, though. I often wonder if they plan it in advance. My theory is that they're just standing there one morning, looking around at all the miserable faces, and the urge just takes them. Screw it. Boom! They've traumatised some poor driver for life. Game over. Before Shane had a chance to respond, a loud bell signalled the beginning of their shift. Like obedient Pavlovian dogs, they padded out into the massive warehouse and went to work. It was repetitive and thankless labour. Robots retrieved stock from the darkened recesses of the building, and he then transferred it by hand to the packaging department. There was a supervisor, but Shane had only spoken to her once or twice. He took his orders from a small scanning device that hung from his belt. It was a twilight existence, dimly lit, and smelling of oil and plastic. That morning was like any other. He walked back and forth until another bell announced that it was lunchtime. His work coat was barely back on its hook before his mobile phone started ringing. It was Linda.
Shane! Shane, she's gone!
Once the police had finally left, they found themselves sitting opposite each other at the kitchen table. It had been a madhouse when Shane got home, a maelstrom of questions and activity. Now they were gone, the silence was palpable, and there were only the darkest of thoughts to fill that void. Linda was clearly in shock, her tear-stained face pale and drawn. Shane could think of nothing to say that hadn't already been said, or that wouldn't make it seem as if he blamed her. Of course, he couldn't help but do exactly that. He hadn't been here after all. And anyway, how could anyone lose a child in their own flat? How could Emma have disappeared in the brief moment that her mother had turned away? Had something unthinkable happened that she just couldn't admit?
You blame me, don't you?
No, of course not.
They both looked at the empty high chair at the same time. Shane lay in bed, staring at the ceiling. He felt brittle, as if he might shatter into 1,000 pieces at any moment.
Where was she?
His mind raced through the possibilities, never settling on anything. Linda lay beside him, unconscious thanks to the ministrations of a police doctor. She'd been hysterical while they went about their business, and the sleeping pills were an act of kindness. Now she lay on her back like a corpse, arms by her side. He listened to the sounds of London, the faint buzz of traffic and distant sirens. It was the same background noise that he fell asleep to every night, but well, now he could imagine his daughter calling out for him, calling out for help. It was a vast jungle out there for someone so small to be lost in.
Sod this.
Tired of torturing himself, he got up and pulled on his clothes. His watch read midnight. Grabbing his coat, he headed out to the front door with the intention of having a smoke and clearing his mind. The moment the latch clicked behind him, though, one of the other two flats on the shared landing opened their door. A face appeared. It was a middle-aged man, red-eyed and skeletal. His thinning grey hair seemed to be the remnants of a Mohican, and his ears bore multiple piercings. He looked Shane up and down slowly, and he nodded.
So, you lost your little girl?
Well, she's gone missing, yeah. I suppose the police spoke to you?
Me? Nah. Nah, I don't like talking to the police. I don't live here anyway.
Christ! Don't you even know who lives next door?
What's the world coming to?
Well, we...
Calm down. I'm just yanking your chain.
You're Shane, yeah?
That's right.
Well, Shane, I might be able to help you out. The only thing is, you'll have to do me a few favours first.
What do you mean, help me out? I don't understand.
With your daughter, I mean. You'd like to see her again, wouldn't you?
A wave of nausea passed over Shane.
What do you mean? Do you know something? Where is she?
Shane was suddenly in the man's face, ready to do whatever violence it took to get Emma back. The adrenaline headache was almost instant.
Where is she? Tell me now before I do something I regret.
Calm down, mate. Calm down. You need to take a deep breath. She's not here. I can help you. But you have to do a few things for me first.
What? You blackmailing me?
Chill. Oh, you're not going to like this. But you have to accept what I'm saying. Or you'll never see... What was it? Emma? Ever again.
What if I go to the police? What then?
Well, then this conversation never happened. And you've lost any chance of seeing your daughter alive again.
You can't go to the police. You can't speak to your wife.
If you do either of those things, and trust me, I have ways of knowing if you do, then I will just disappear. You could risk it, of course. It's a free world. But I guarantee you this. It's your one and only chance.
The man shrugged, as if to say he didn't care either way.
What do you think? Can you deal with that?
This is insane. You have to tell me where my daughter is.
But last chance, Shane. Will you do what I ask? Or shall we just pretend this never happened?
Wait, I... What do you want me to do?
Now we're talking. Keep your head, mate, and this could end all right. And the first thing that I want you to do is a sort of test. A starter for 10, as they say. I want you to steal a book for me. It'll be easy. The owner's bedridden. Little old lady. You can just stroll in and pinch it. Wait there. I'll write down the title and the address for you.
He kept his head down on the bus, horribly aware that there was bound to be a camera on board. The leafy avenues of Primrose Hill were not his usual habitat, and just being here made him uncomfortable. Never mind that. He told himself. He had a job to do, and that was all that mattered. Focus on the goal. Think of Emma. His hands were shaking when he got off. He stuffed them into his pockets and looked around. Odd numbers were on the other side, so he crossed over. Number 23 was much like the others. A low wall sat in front of a small garden that led up to a large, creeper-covered, Victorian terraced house. Not wanting to draw attention to himself, he walked up the path and round to the left, as he had been instructed. There was a locked wooden door at the entrance to the back garden. Taking a deep breath, he shimmied up and over it, landing with a thump on the other side. Instead of the neatly groomed plot that he'd anticipated, there was an overgrown mess. He could see various garden implements buried in the undergrowth and a small shed that had half collapsed at the back.
Keep going, he whispered to himself.
Drawn curtains covered both of the back windows. He stepped up to the back door and tried the handle, fully prepared to smash his way in if it was locked. But the door opened at first try. Inside, it smelled of cats and stale tobacco. It was oppressive and unwelcoming. He passed a kitchen on his left and a small bathroom on his right. The library was next, and he stepped inside. The dim room only increased his sense of unease. He pictured getting caught in here. There was only one exit.
Come on, Shane. It's just a little old lady. Do it for Emma.
Each wall had a bookcase, resplendent with cobwebs and dust. He peered at the titles, desperate to find what he was looking for. There was no kind of order, and he was forced to look through them all. Half were foreign. Some had nothing written on their threadbare spines. Eventually, though, he found it. As he reached out, something slithered past his ankles. His chest tightened, and he suppressed the urge to scream as he spun round to see a cat running from the room.
Bloody hell! Nearly gave me a heart attack!
The heavy footsteps on the stairs did not sound like they belonged to a frail old woman. Shane had no intention of waiting to find out. With the book under his arm, he dashed out into the hallway and back into the garden.
Come here, you!
A quick glance over his shoulder revealed a bald behemoth striding towards him. Stuffing the book into his jacket, he scrambled over the closed garden door and ran.
Stop! Thief!
Shane ran like he had never run before, ignoring the shooting pains cutting through his chest. His legs felt like limp spaghetti, and he feared that they might give out. Fortunately, they held, and he managed to leave his pursuer behind. Late afternoon shadows were winding their way across the pavement as Shane climbed the steps to his flat. He looked around, furtively, to see if anyone was watching. It would have been difficult to explain what he was doing to Linda, and he wasn't sure that he would have much sympathy if he were caught by accident. His emotions were a strange mixture of doubt, fear, loss, and the smallest amount of hope as he knocked. It was answered immediately.
Ah, it's you. How'd you do? You got it? Well done. Well done. Right. Well, that was the easy part. You better come in. Time for step two.
I see. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Bye.
Shane watched Linda hang up.
No. No news. They want us to call them if we hear anything.
Of course.
They might do a press conference.
Jesus.
They stared at their bowls of cereal without enthusiasm, lost in thought.
I think I'll go and see Mary for a while today. Get out of the flat, you know.
Shane sighed with relief.
That's a good idea. I might go for a walk. Did me good yesterday.
Right.
Good. Okay then.
Shane wondered how they could carry on from here, from this specific moment in time. Normality seemed such a long way away. He doubted either of them would have the will or the strength to make the journey. Even if they got Emma back, their lives had been broken. He could see it in her eyes, and he was sure that she could see it in his. Perhaps they would find something acceptable, a state of being that they could settle for, but he doubted it. He doubted he would even be able to live with himself after what he'd have to do today. He looked up from the table at Linda. She was watching him, but turned away when he caught her eye. There was nothing positive they could say to each other.
I think I'll go out now. I need some fresh air.
All right. I'll see you later.
Right.
He hesitated, still hoping to find something reassuring to say, but words failed him. Best he just do what he had to. Perhaps then they could connect again.
See you later.
Once outside, he allowed himself a breath or two before processing the next nightmare he had to deal with. The agony that he and Linda were feeling, the bottomless pit of loss that Emma's disappearance had engendered, and the price that he had to pay to try and fix all of this. They were not things that he could deal with simultaneously. He was in danger of simply curling up into a ball and screaming if he couldn't find a way to compartmentalise these pressures. His destination was within walking distance. He was glad of that. The bus had made him nervous, and that was for a simple theft. This time, anonymity was key. Of course, this was London, and anonymity seemed ubiquitous, but well, that was a dangerous mindset for today. Perhaps he should have worn a disguise, but then Linda would have questioned what he was doing. No, he would just keep his head down and trust that luck was on his side. If he was caught later, so be it. As long as Emma was safe again, it really didn't matter. He arrived outside the office at 10:02. The initial doubt, temporarily washed aside by desperation, had returned, threatening to derail him from his purpose. He leaned against the wall, took some deep breaths, and reminded himself why he was here. It was difficult to reconcile the insanity of such an act with the purity of his purpose. Or maybe trying to do so was in itself lunacy. But he had to be strong. Right. There were three names and three bells next to the tatty black door. The top one read, Daniel Knight, Solicitor. He pressed it, and the intercom crackled in response.
Coming up, third floor.
We've made an appointment for you at 10. Just go in, do it, and leave. It'll be over in no time. This was it. He took the first and second flights of stairs quickly and paused on the third. He pulled the thing he'd been given from his pocket. Make sure you give it a few seconds to warm up. He switched it on, counted to 5, and carried on up the stairs.
Don't feel bad. He's a terrible person. Just think of your daughter.
Come in.
Shane put the taser behind his back and entered. Knight was sitting at a desk crowded with piles of books and paperwork. The walls were lined with old filing cabinets, some with their drawers half open. The man himself was red-faced and obese, sweating in a pinstripe shirt. He didn't wear a tie.
Welcome, welcome. You're right on time. Now, let me see. Was this to do with a house purchase?
Shane's fingers tightened around the weapon. The sound of his own heart beating almost drowned out the man's words. He had to do it now, or he never would.
I'm sorry.
He stepped towards the desk and pointed the taser at Knight's chest.
What the hell is that?
Knight rose from his seat, inadvertently making himself an easier target. Shane fired. 2 electrodes shot out and stuck to the astonished solicitor. Electricity arced across the wires and in to his body.
He has a pacemaker.
The target froze, rigid for a moment, before falling forwards, knocking the contents of the table flying. His head hit the wood with a crunch, and Shane could see blood as Knight slumped backwards onto the floor. He walked cautiously round to the body.
A double check that he's dead. Dead is the deal.
Daniel Knight was not coming back. His eyes were wide open and motionless. There was pink drool on his lips. Shane flicked the off switch and pulled the wires free from the gun before stuffing it into a pocket. Time to leave. On the narrow stairs, he met a silver-haired woman in a business suit coming the other way.
I heard a loud bang. Is everything all right?
Shane didn't answer. Just pushed past her and ran down as fast as he could. Once he was out in the street, he took off, turning into the first side street that he came to. Nobody appeared to be giving chase, but he kept going until, winded, he had to stop and catch his breath. His guilt felt like a neon sign above his head, but nobody gave him a second glance. There was a bus stop just along from him, where half a dozen people stood milling about, as if it was just another day. How could they not know? How could it not be obvious that he had just ceased to be like them? That he was a killer now? As he walked the rest of the way back home, he tried to fill himself with hope. Hope was all that he had now. The return of his daughter was the only thing that could compensate in any way for what he had done. Without it, he was doubly destroyed. He tried to imagine what it would be like to hold her again, to lift her up and squeeze her tight, to see her smiling face. He couldn't hold on to the thought, though. He kept thinking about what he'd done. The path that he had taken might well secure her safety, but he would never be the same. The door opened before he could knock, and his nameless tormentor appeared. His face was twisted into a grotesque smile.
"Here he is, the man of the hour. Come inside. Come inside."
Shane stepped into the hallway of the tiny flat and pulled the door closed behind him.
"Where is she?" "Hold on now, mate."
Shane grabbed a handful of the man's shirt, his self-control slipping away.
"Don't gimme that. Where the hell is she?" "Whoa there. You need to be careful." "Where is she?"
"You're only one step away from seeing the girl."
"Really?
One step?
Well, I'm starting to doubt she's even alive.
Let me go and I'll prove it to you. Take a deep breath, mate, before you hurt yourself. Or her."
Shane forced himself to step back.
"I thought you might ask."
So a small lock of golden hair appeared in the man's hand. It vanished again, as quickly as it had appeared.
"Well, that's not proof. How do I know it's hers?"
"It's hers. That's all you have to know. Now, the question that I have to ask you is this. How badly do you want her back?"
"She means everything to me. Everything. Just... Like, I'd do anything to get her back, all right?"
"Now we're talking. You might just get to see her again."
"Right. After what I've done."
"You've got one more thing to do, and then you'll have her back. I swear to you, on my mother's grave, one more thing. Now this is what we've been building up to. You're not going to like it, but the choice is entirely yours. Do this one thing, and you get to see little
Emma."
"Emma, yeah, that's it. Do this one thing for me, and you'll get to see Emma again. Name it. Bring me your wife's heart."
"What?
Cut your wife's heart out and bring it to me, and then we're done.
You're crazy. I'm not doing that."
"Well, the choice is entirely yours, mate. That's the price."
"I can't."
"You can rant and rave, as I'm sure you'd like to, but
it's how it is."
"No. Tell you what, have a think about it. Hopefully I'll see you back here shortly with what I want. If not, well, no hard feelings."
Linda was sitting at the kitchen table. Her eyes were red and puffy, and damp streaks stained her cheeks. She watched him come in.
"Didn't expect you back so soon."
"I didn't think you'd be here either."
Shane walked over to the kitchen sink and leant against it with both hands, his back to Linda. He closed his eyes. His body ached, and he felt as if his back might break from the invisible weight bearing down on him. How had he managed to get to this point? Without thinking, he pulled open the drawer where they kept their carving knife.
"It's not in there."
He turned slowly. Linda stood behind him, the missing item gripped tightly in her hand. His gaze wavered from her face to the blade and back again.
"So he got to you too? Why didn't you tell me?"
"Why didn't you tell me?"
"He told me not to. I didn't want to risk it."
"Same." "Give me the knife."
"No."
"Put it down at least."
"No."
"So what?
You're going to kill me then? Cut out my heart?"
"I don't want to, but..."
"Emma."
"Sheen, I have to get her back. I have to. There has to be another way, Linda. I don't want to die, and I don't want to..."
Her expression hardened, and she lunged towards him. He grabbed her wrist before the point reached him, and they struggled for control of the knife. He was larger, and he had weight on his side. But she was determined. Just when he thought he had loosened her grip, she brought her knee up, and he had no choice but to back away.
"This is madness!"
He grabbed a chair and held it out in front of him, swinging it as he advanced on her.
"You can't win! Throw it away!
Someone has to die!"
The blade shook in Linda's grasp, but she showed no sign of letting go.
"Look, we could go next door, together. Force him to tell us where she is.
Someone has to die. For Emma."
"No!"
She tore her own throat open with a vicious slash, severing the artery and sending a spray of crimson arcing across him. He could only watch as the knife fell to the floor and she grasped at the wound. An expression of surprise fading while she bled out in front of him. She seemed to be trying to say something, but he couldn't make it out. Linda made a last, desperate, gurgling sound. And then she was gone. Shane sunk to his knees and wept, devoid of thought or understanding, drowning in darkness. When he could cry no more, he steeled himself to do what had to be done. He butchered her in silence, mechanically, until he held her still, warm heart in his hands. He staggered to his feet and carried it outside. Next door was unlocked and open, a crack of darkness. He elbowed his way inside.
"Here it is. I've got what you wanted. I've done what you asked. Give me my daughter."
His voice echoed around the empty rooms. There was nobody there, nor any sign that there ever had been. There was nothing.
The Cardiac Ordeal was written by Andrew Freudenberg and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. You can find it, along with 13 other stories, in My Dead and Blackened Heart, published by the Sinister Horror Company, although it was first published by Black Shuck Books in Great British Horror Volume 2, Dark Satanic Mills. Copyright 2017. Links to these, along with attributions for the music and sound effects I've used, can be found in the show notes. The Cardiac Ordeal was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.